Hello, this is Dennis, welcoming you to edition number 2177 of the Merton Talking News, recorded on Thursday the 20th of October 2022. The news is taken from the local newspapers, Wimbledon Guardian and Croydon, etc. Reading for you this week are Lucy, Colin, Mena and Claudio. And we've got Matthew on the controls. And it's over to Lucy for the first item.
Teenage boys beaten by trio during attempted robbery in Mitcham. Two teenage boys have allegedly been beaten during an attempted robbery in Mitcham. On Thursday the 6th of October at around 6 p.m, three males allegedly attempted to steal items from two teenage boys in the cricket green area in Mitcham. The boys were repeatedly beaten during the attempted robbery. No arrests have been made and police are now investigating the incident. If you witness this attack or have any further information, contact police quoting reference number CRIS 141256/22. And now over to Colin.
Thank you, Lucy. Nestlé Tower update. It has now been more than 3 years since work started on turning Croydon's iconic Nestlé Tower into flats, part of a £500 million project, including a new public square. It was originally supposed to be completed by the end of 2021, but all construction work paused sometime in 2020. Scaffolding still surrounds the building, with businesses in the dark about what is happening. The first phase of the project involves turning the 25-storey Nestlé Tower into a series of tower blocks of up to 28 storeys, providing 288 new homes. Known as Queen's Square, the project is being delivered by R&F Properties and includes plans to redevelop St George's Walk into a public square outside Croydon Town Hall. However, a link to more information about Queen's Square listed on the R&F website now does not work. The first half of the covered shopping area opposite the town hall was demolished in 2019. R&F was contacted for an update but did not reply. And now over to Mena. Okay.
Thank you, Colin. Activists target hunting shops. Animal Rebellion, AR, activists vandalised hunting shops with paint as hundreds of fellow campaigners protested in central London recently to demand a plant-based future. Campaigners poured red paint inside Farlow's, a hunting and fishing shop on Pall Mall, and daubed paint on the windows of William Evans, a shooting supply shop in nearby St James's Street, while others took and emptied milk from supermarkets. The group, an offshoot of Extinction Rebellion, describes itself as a mass movement using non-violent civil disobedience to call for a just, sustainable, plant-based food system. After putting out a message calling all vegans to occupy London, AR said protesters brought London's West End to a standstill as people marched from Green Park to Piccadilly Circus. They are calling on Prime Minister Liz Truss and Environmental Secretary Ranil Jayawardena to tackle what they call the climate, ecological and cost of living crises. Dylan Parsons, 21, from Preston, a spokesperson for AR, said, "We are demanding that the government transition to a plant-based future. Animal farming and fishing is the key cause to the climate crisis. So if we transition away to a plant-based food system, we cannot only stop 76 billion animals a year from being killed, we can feed the whole population several times over, free up 76% of global agricultural land, and give every person and all future generations a chance of having a better future on this planet." And now over to Claudio.
Thank you, Mena. Council set to make more than £1 million from fining parents outside schools. Croydon Council is expected to make more than £1 million from fining drivers outside schools next year. The figures were confirmed at a cabinet meeting on Wednesday night, October the 12th, where nine new school streets were given the green light. It will bring the total across the borough to 33. The schemes aim to improve air quality and safety outside schools, with drivers facing a fine of up to £130 for entering the streets at drop-off and pick-up times during term time. The 9 new schemes will be rolled out outside these primary schools: The Crescent, South Norwood, St Cyprian's Greek Orthodox, Howard, Oasis Shirley Park, Good Shepherd, Kenley, Gonville Academy, and Park Hill Junior and Infants. The Leader of the Opposition welcomed the introduction of more school streets, but asked how much money the council expected to make from them. He said, "With very few exceptions, they have proved to be popular with schools and parents. More importantly, they have created safer environments at our school gates, and I would anticipate that the 9 will do likewise." Nick Hibbard, Corporate Director of Sustainable Communities, Regeneration and Economic Recovery at Croydon, said, "These school streets, as they are implemented, will generate revenue as traffic management offences are committed. We do make an estimate of the revenue that is generated from those traffic contraventions. The estimate for this financial year is £500,000, and for the next financial year it goes above £1 million. As part of that, we estimate that the revenue goes down over time as we get compliance, as people get used to the ANPR cameras in place. Of course, it is a secondary consequence. The policy is around making streets safer for children around the school area. It is expected to cost nearly £300,000 to implement the new school streets. They will be introduced on a trial basis for up to 18 months. Mayor Jason Perry said, "The schemes are there for protecting young people and enhancing their journey to school, but they do deliver revenue over time that tends to decrease." And now back to Lucy.
A South London MP wants to see plans for more than 100 homes on a former sports ground overturned. In September, Merton Council gave developer Bellway the green light for 107 new homes, 44 of which would be classed as affordable on the former London Electricity Sports and Social Association, LESSA, in Raynes Park. The land in Meadowview Road was a private ground for the use of company employees and closed down in 2000. Since then, it has been shut to the public. Stephen Hammond, MP for Wimbledon, said it was a huge surprise the application was passed just months after similar plans were rejected by Merton Council. He thinks the land should be brought back into sports use for locals. In a video statement, the Conservative MP said, "Unfortunately, the Bellway application was passed, so I have written to the Secretary of State for levelling up to make sure this application is called in and properly reviewed so people can hear that there is a viable sports alternative and that local opposition is respected. I want to see local residents in West Barnes have the environment and sporting opportunities that everyone else has. Stopping Bellway building houses on LESSA is a key part of that." The plans were approved at the end of September. The application came after a similar application was rejected by the council in June, after more than 260 objections. The approved plans received 120 objections and include an extra football pitch and more than £1 million in contributions to other sports sites in the borough. This includes £1.1 million for the new cricket wicket and changing rooms at Joseph Hood Recreation Ground. £100,000 to a rugby club. Julian Goodban from Bellway Home said, "This site has never before been open to the public. It was a private facility for the sole use of employees, so there is no loss of a sporting facility. In terms of a potential sporting use for the whole site, the council's own assessment is that given the upfront site preparation costs, sports use isn't a deliverable option."
Chris Philp loses job after just 6 weeks. The MP for Croydon South has lost his job as Treasury Chief Secretary less than 6 weeks after he was given the job. Chris Philp has been moved to the Cabinet Office following the sacking of Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng. Mr. Kwarteng has been replaced by Jeremy Hunt. Edward Agar takes over from Mr. Philp, and the Croydon MP will move to Mr. Agar's previous role as Paymaster General and Minister for the Cabinet Office. Mr. Philp was appointed to the role in September. At the time, he said, "I'll work with colleagues across government to deliver good value for UK taxpayers' hard-earned cash in my new role as Chief Secretary to the Treasury." He defended government plans in media interviews in the weeks following the mini-budget. This week, in the House of Commons, he said, "The real risk is not having a growth plan. The real risk is having taxes that are too high. The real risk is not investing in infrastructure." In a press conference, Prime Minister Liz Truss said the decision has been made to keep the increase in corporation tax the government previously said it would drop. She said, "The way we are delivering our mission right now has to change. We need to act now to reassure the markets of our fiscal discipline. I have therefore decided to keep the increase in corporation tax that was planned by the previous government."
Council paying £2,000 a month for empty bungalow. A bungalow which Croydon Council allegedly pays £2,000 a month for has been empty for 7 years, it is claimed. A neighbour said the situation is upsetting and frustrating, as so many people are in need of a home. Monica McSherry lives next door to the bungalow in the Glade, Shirley. She claims the last tenants moved out of the property in 2015, though Croydon Council says it has only been vacant since early 2020. The 51-year-old claims the property is leased to the council by a private landlord through the Croydlease scheme. Through this, he has continued to be paid £2,000 a month by Croydon Council, despite the property being empty, she said. Since being contacted by the local democracy reporting service, the council said it was looking into the property and confirmed it had been empty since 2020. Ms. McSherry said the last tenants moved out because there were issues with the sewage. The landlord says it is the problem of Croydon Council. "I got so frustrated that he is receiving all that money and you've got people who are evicted from their homes and need somewhere to live. Me and my neighbours have all complained to the council, but nothing has been done about it." With the financial crisis that we have in Croydon Council, how can they still afford to pay this landlord? The neighbour said since it has become empty for so long, the property has deteriorated further and is becoming a dumping ground. Ms. McSherry added, "It's upsetting and frustrating that we are living in very desperate times. Councils and landlords are evicting tenants due to rent arrears and benefits not increasing to meet rent increases. Yet the council continues to pay out extraordinary amounts of money on empty properties. It is the council's failing of not maintaining the property and using it for tenants that urgently need it. The aim of the Croydlease scheme is so the council can house people on the social housing waiting list. The council takes on the houses for 5 years initially, which can be renewed and extended to 10. A Croydon Council spokesperson said, "We want as many homes as possible to be available for Croydon residents who need them, and are currently looking into the situation with this property. We will be working together with the landlord to make sure any necessary repairs are swiftly carried out."
Met Police warn against takeaway licence extension. Met Police has warned against a West London restaurant and takeaway being allowed to open late at night, and said the venue had previously served food past closing time. Chicago Grill has applied to stay open until 2 a.m. between Thursday and Saturday, and until 1 a.m. Sundays to Wednesdays. The application has faced a backlash from residents, as the venue is in Richmond's Cumulative Impact Zone, CIZ, meaning there are already lots of licensed venues close together in the area, and any new applications should be limited. Locals were also concerned about late-night disturbances in the town centre. Addressing police concerns about operating outside of hours, managers at the eatery on Kew Road apologised for the genuine mistake and said they had believed a licence, previously held by another business at the venue, was still in force. At Tuesday's licensing committee, the takeaway solicitor, Graham Hopkins, said the professionally run restaurant could help the area by spreading out queues. Speaking on behalf of the restaurant, he said the managers are late-night food experts who have other businesses in London which don't get complaints, and they did the best they could with the application. He said, "Yes, it's all right in hindsight to say they should have done more due diligence about opening times, and that has been pointed out to them. But they did do what they thought was appropriate at the time. They wrote to Merton Council, and they checked on the council's website, and that licence was shown. So I don't think that's necessarily fair to blame them for that." He added, "There's no evidence before you today that they won't comply with the conditions." Solicitor Michael Feeney, speaking on behalf of the Met Police, said there was no convincing explanation for why the restaurant should be allowed to open in the CIZ. He said the police had no faith the managers would be capable or willing to uphold the licensing objectives. Mr. Feeney said, "Granting licenses in the cumulative impact zone is exceptional, and this premises is not exceptional. It's a standard takeaway with a standard set of conditions which will not solve any of the problems as Chicago Grill in Kew Road wants to extend its opening hours. At best, at very best, the premises will be able to shift the problem to somewhere else in the area, but it won't address the cumulative impact, and the whole point of the cumulative impact policy is to address cumulative impact and to address the density of licensed venues in the area so that the problem isn't just shifted from one venue to another." Virginia Curry, speaking on behalf of the Richmond Society, also said, "There's no means of people departing from this town, so particularly in the summer months and such like, they stay and they cause problems and antisocial behaviour, which is what we don't want." Chicago Grill said it will address concerns, including bringing in last order times for people eating at the venue to 10:45 p.m., regular litter picking outside, and using CCTV. Richmond Council's licensing committee will decide on the application.
Merton Council wants more support for drivers amid ULEZ plans. There are fears the poorest in Merton would be hit with a stealth tax if an ultra-low emission zone is rolled out across the capital. The council is calling for more support for those that need to use their cars, including a generous scrappage scheme for residents with the most polluting cars, a daily charge of £12.50 for vehicles not meeting emission standards could be introduced in August 2023 under ULEZ plans. Transport for London carried out a consultation on the proposals earlier this year. At a Merton Council meeting on Wednesday the 21st of September, the Conservative group tabled a motion for the council to demand that plans for the zone be dropped. Councillor Eleanor Cox said people of London beware of the Labour mayor who is a reverse Robin Hood, taking from the poorest of our society through a ULEZ stealth tax of £12.50 a day during a cost of living crisis. Our Labour mayor says only 18% will be impacted by ULEZ. The financial burden of ULEZ will be forced onto this 18% and affect our most vulnerable residents. Councillor Cox claimed cleaner air in Greater London could be achieved by rolling out a fully electric bus fleet in the city. But the council's deputy leader, Councillor Eleanor Stringer, hit back, saying the Labour group takes air quality very seriously, saying drivers shouldn't be pitted against public transport users. She said, in our consultation response, we focused on the need to look after the low-income households who can't afford a new vehicle. We also need to consider workers who need to drive, or people who need carers to drive to their homes. A Labour amendment of the motion called on central government to step in and for more support for those who can't replace their polluting cars, including care workers and those who use their cars for work. Councillor Stringer added, "We are calling for a generous and well-run scrappage scheme to support residents who want to replace their vehicles with cleaner ones. They should also look at options such as retrofitting vehicles to avoid residents needing to buy completely new cars." We know the Mayor of London is trying to do the right thing, but without funding, he is limited in what he can do to support all those groups who need financial assistance if the proposals go ahead. We call on central government needs to step up and fund accordingly. Labour's amendment was packed by the Council's Liberal Democrat opposition and was carried. Liberal Democrat leader Councillor Anthony Fairclough said, "We very much feel that the proposals to extend ULEZ should not be about raising revenue. The amendment mirrors much of the mitigation we put forward in our consultation response."
Stabbing victim named as 24-year-old Morden man. Police have named the victim of a fatal stabbing in Kingston as Michael Aguiar, who was 24 years old, from Morden. Officers were called to Fairfield Road at 10:20 p.m. on Thursday, October the 13th, after a man was found with stab injuries. It is believed that Michael was attacked in the street before he made his way to Fairfield East while injured. He went into the Albion Pub Garden looking for help from customers and staff, who called for the emergency services. Michael died at the scene. His family is currently being supported by specialist officers. A 25-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of assisting an offender, and he remains in custody. No further arrests have been made. A post-mortem examination at Kingston Mortuary on Saturday, October the 15th, confirmed that the cause of his death was from his stab wounds. Police are asking witnesses to the attack, or anyone with further information, to come forward and contact police, quoting crime reference number 7902/13oct22. Detective Chief Inspector Wayne Jolly said, "Our investigation continues with the arrest of a man, but we still urgently need to speak to anyone who may have information about what happened on Thursday evening. It is really important that if you witnessed any part of this incident, even if you don't think it was important, you please come forward and speak to us. My thoughts are very much with this young man's family and friends." A spokesman for Metropolitan Police said detectives investigating the murder of a man in Kingston have named him as Michael Aguiar, who was 24, from Morden. As they continue appeals for witnesses and information, officers were called shortly before 22:20 hours on Thursday the 13th of October to the vicinity of Fairfield Road after a man was found with stab injuries. London Ambulance Services and London's Air Ambulance also attended, but despite their best efforts, Michael died at the scene. His next of kin have been informed, and they are being supported by specially trained officers. Information can also be provided to the independent charity Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111 or by visiting crimestoppers.uk.org.
Heat waves lead to higher UK death rate. Deaths in England and Wales during the summer heat waves were 6% higher than normal for the time of year, new analysis shows. Some 56,303 people died during five periods of hot weather between mid-June and late August, 3,271 deaths above the long-term average, according to the Office for National Statistics, ONS. The largest number of extra deaths, known as excess deaths, was between July 10th and 25th, when 2,227 took place, 10.4% above average. This coincided with the country enduring some of the hottest temperatures recorded in the UK, including a new high of 40.3°C on July 19th at Coningsby in Lincolnshire.
Plans to bring back a bird missing for 200 years. Soon, bird watchers in Kent will be able to hear the cry of a bird last heard in the county more than 200 years ago. Plans are well advanced to reintroduce the chough in Kent about two centuries after persecution and intensive farming practices led to the bird disappearing from the county. Ignorance led to the chough's downfall. People who saw choughs foraging on the ground believed they were eating crops rather than promoting growth by consuming harmful insects. They saw choughs supposedly killing livestock when what they were actually doing was feeding on blowfly pupa on the carcasses. And they even believed choughs set fire to their houses, breaking in to steal lighted candles they then used to fly up and ignite straw roofs. Difficult to believe now, but this behaviour was reported as fact in a 1586 book by Elizabethan historian William Camden, and led to widespread chough slaughter. No wonder choughs are scarce in Britain, with only 330 breeding pairs, mostly in Wales, Cornwall and the Isle of Man. Resembling crows, with bright red curved bills and crimson feet, they eat leather jackets, dung beetles and other soil invertebrates, mainly on clifftop chalk downland pastures. A chough reintroduction project, run jointly by Kent Wildlife Trust and Wildwood Trust, hopes to release birds on grazed land around Dover, ideal for their feeding requirements and acrobatic flights, including rapid swoops, turning upside down, vertical climbs, and spitfire-like barrel rolls. This location would be appropriate, as choughs are mentioned inhabiting the area in Shakespeare's King Lear. He describes birds on the wing at Dover, near what is now known as Shakespeare Cliff. Thomas Becket, former Archbishop of Canterbury, included the chough on his personal coat of arms, and it also appears on the city coat of arms. Cornish folk insist King Arthur did not die, but his soul was transported into a chough with bill and legs red from battle. The birds, which mate for life, feel so comfortable in pre-release aviaries at Dover Castle, they have even bred there. By November, the choughs will be returned to aviaries at Wildwood, Herne Bay, where they can be seen during winter, but it is hoped the first releases will take place from Dover in spring. If so, they will be roaring out their distinctive chee-ow call, and it will be choughs rather than bluebirds over the White Cliffs of Dover. To donate to the cost of the chough reintroduction scheme, please visit the Wildwood Trust or Kent Wildlife Trust websites.
Licenses for oil and gas exploration. A new licensing round for oil and gas exploration in the North Sea will be good for the environment, Climate Minister Graham Stewart has said. The North Sea Transition Authority, NSTA, will begin the 33rd round of offshore licences, with the UK government arguing increasing production will boost the economy and energy security. Our development is not going to affect our usage, Mr Stewart said. It sounds contradictory, but it's actually good for the environment. But Green Party co-leader Adrian Ramsay said, the government's claim that burning even more fossil fuels from the North Sea will help the UK meet its international obligations to become net zero by 2050 has no connection to reality.
Nature Notes with Tony Drakeford. Listen out for owls. Autumn is the time when tawny owls become more vocal as they seek potential partners and nesting sites. It's only comparatively recently been realised that the familiar twit-to-woo call is not made by one bird, but by male and female performing a duet, whereby the female utters her twit or kwik, and the male responds with his long, drawn-out, wavering hoo. Several years ago, a pair of tawnies regularly nested in a veteran-protected oak about 100 yards away from my house. I used to enjoy being lulled to sleep by the owls in the nesting season, until very early one morning, before anyone could protest, developers moved in and felled the tree. The fine imposed by the local council for destroying the oak was a mere fraction of the selling price of the house built on the site. Another common owl introduced from the continent in the 19th century and rapidly spread throughout Britain is the little owl. When I was a very young boy bird watching on Mitcham Common, I looked up to see a little owl peering down at me with his huge yellow eyes, a sight I'll never forget. Several pairs rest in Richmond Park, and sometimes one can be seen sitting on a fence post as the species hunt both by night and day. They can often be heard calling, uttering a plaintive coo, which can be mistaken for one of the many parakeets residing in the park.
Wimbledon Care Home recreates tennis stars as scarecrows. A care home in Wimbledon Village has created two unique scarecrows for a competition held by the home. Residents and staff at Lee House decided to recreate tennis stars Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic in tribute to the area's link to the sport. The duo, whose real-life counterparts have won 41 Grand Slam titles between them, come complete with tennis rackets, balls and net. These scarecrows were made for an optional competition across all Abbeyfield houses and homes nationwide. While this is the first time the Scarecrow Challenge has been held, it has proved quite popular, so there is every chance it will run again. A spokesman for the home explained that the winners had not yet been decided. The housing charity said that the aim of the scarecrows was to attract the attention of the local communities and to put our houses and homes on the map. The opportunity to open their doors and gardens to visitors following COVID restrictions has been largely welcomed by staff and residents. Abbeyfield has said that the Scarecrow Challenge allowed residents to use their imagination and draw on their creativity. The housing charity says that staff, residents and volunteers routinely put on events and activities that welcome in people from the local neighbourhood. Some examples include Platinum Jubilee parties held in June, year-round open days, fetes and coffee mornings. Anna Boyes, Abbeyfield's Director of Marketing, said, "We wanted to devise an autumnal competition that allowed our talented staff and residents to show a bit of creative flair. The scarecrows help to put our houses and homes on the map and will hopefully become a quirky feature that will attract the attention of passers-by. As the weather grows colder, the scarecrows will serve as a reminder of the warm, friendly environment that Abbeyfield provides. Abbeyfield provides the perfect solution to the accommodation and support needs of over 55s, whilst enabling them to maintain as much independence in later life as they wish. Through our values of community and companionship, we strive to help alleviate the feelings of loneliness and isolation that can be quite prevalent amongst the older population, particularly over the winter months."
And finally, some sport. Truly inspired goalkeeping from Kepa. As the new Blues manager continues to prove himself a master tactician, he may have to rename himself Graham Plotter at this rate, Chelsea fans are agog at the rebirth of goalkeeper Kepa. Out of favour under Thomas Tuchel, who always preferred Edouard Mendy between the sticks, the Spaniard, who turned 28 this month, made save after save at Villa Park and will continue to keep his place when Manchester United visit this weekend, writes Tim Harrison. It was, quite simply, his best display for Chelsea. Confident, inspiring and assured. Perhaps he needed time out of the spotlight to adjust his focus after spells of inconsistency. Whatever Potter is doing to this Chelsea side, he seems to have given Kepa Arrizabalaga a new lease of life, as well as getting the best out of Mason Mount and Mateo Kovacic. The quality of the Blues football at present has eclipsed some of the gloom that has followed the news Reece James's knee injury means he will almost certainly miss out on the World Cup. "We needed Kepa, and he made some fantastic saves," said the manager at the end of the Villa match. "I'm delighted with the 3 points, delighted with the clean sheet, and pleased for Mason and Kepa. Different players need to step up, and today they've done it." Chelsea fly to Austria on Sunday to prepare to play Salzburg in Europe.
And that completes this week's edition of the Merton Talking News. So thanks to our readers, Lucy, Colin, Mena and Claudio. And thanks also to Matthew on the controls. Please return your memory stick to the studio after you have listened to the magazine, which is presented this week by Tina Walford. This is Dennis saying thank you for listening. Have a lovely weekend and bye for now.